nice intro music. All right. The word of the day is delegate. That's actually Merriam-Webster's word of the day, delegate, to entrust to another, to appoint as one's representative, to assign responsibility or authority, the definition of delegate. And with me in studio is Congressman Tom Emmer. He was sworn in for his first term in the U.S. House of Representatives on January 6, 2015. And then again on November 8, 2016, he was overwhelmingly reelected to a second term. And he's with us this morning. Hello, Tom.
Good morning.
Any Dyna Boy like myself? So we have a lot to talk about.
Well, I'm just laughing. I love it. It doesn't usually start that way.
No, it doesn't, does it? But what do you think of the Wild this year? Let's get serious right away.
I'm going to tell you. I think they're celebrating eking out a couple of points here this week, but you know, they've been through a lot. I could be the typical Minnesotan and be sour and, well, you know, they should be winning doing this. They're actually going to get into the playoffs.
They are.
And once you get into the playoffs, it is truly a different season. I am really impressed with Stahl.
I mean,
talk about a guy who's completely resurrected. And I would suggest, even though I don't know him personally, that the change in scenery moving from, what was it, Carolina to New York and now to Minnesota. He moved his family to Minnesota. And whenever I see pictures of him with his boys and they're skating and doing whatever, in order for you to be productive in your job, it's pretty important that your family is happy, healthy, and growing. And it looks like they found the right home.
It really does. And I'm excited. And you're absolutely right, Tom, because when playoffs hit, it's a brand new day. And whatever happened in the season doesn't matter anymore.
By the way, I should tell you, we played in the congressional hockey game 2 weeks ago. The good guys won. It's funny because one of my colleagues, John Katko from New York, his mother passed the night before the game, so he had to leave and go back to Syracuse, which opened up a spot that one of the guy who runs the program invited my second son, Jack, to play because we have members of Congress and then staff from Congress, and I've got a son who works for a different member out of Florida because that's where he went to school. Met this guy, and the guy got elected to Congress, and he said he wanted to go to work in Washington. So now I got a son who I never see that works there, but he played in the hockey game. First time the two of us have been on the ice together in 11 years.
All right? Wow.
We got to play defense together, and I'm proud to announce that the bad guys, that's the other team, they only got 12 shots on net.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I told the story not because of that segue with my son, but because everybody who's ever played that game wants to not only see the Stanley Cup, you know, and when they're little kids, they dream of having their name on it. But when you get older and you know you're not going to have your name on it, you hope that one of your friends wins it so that they bring it over to your house and you can, you know, whatever they do, drink beer out of it. Well, the NHL participates in the congressional hockey game because we raise money for inner city kids' college scholarships. We've raised about $10 million with this game over the a million over the last 10 years. I think they've sent 10 kids to college. So the NHL is heavily involved, and they bring the Stanley Cup, and we have a reception. And the other day, unlike in 2002, I think it was, or four, when they had it at the XL Center, and my whole family was around it. If you come into my congressional office, you'll see a picture of this event.
Love it.
My whole family's around it, and the guy with the white gloves was looking the other way. And my youngest son, Johnny, I tried to set him in the top of the cup, and I thought I was going to jail. They all came running.
Oh, that's a no-no.
Anyway, the other day, Washington, and I said, you know, I'm taking a picture with the Stanley Cup, and I said, can I touch it? And the guy says, absolutely, go ahead. So now I have a picture. It took me 56 years, but I finally actually got to touch the Stanley Cup.
Were you a defenseman?
I was not. They turned me into one at the end, and you might laugh. The guy who turned me into a defenseman is the outgoing coach of the Minnesota Gophers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I played for Don Lucia. So I went to St. Thomas Academy, grew up in Edina, went to St. Thomas Academy, ended up at Boston College after being one of 40 kids invited to try out for the U.S. Junior Olympic team in 1979, summer of 79. That got me an invitation to Boston College, spent a year there playing for Len Siglarski, the lumber business. It was the Emmer Brothers Lumber Company. Went upside down. Took a leave of absence that spring to be closer to the family as my dad and his brothers reorganized the business. And when it was time to go back to Boston after that winter, there's a guy who showed up from the University of Alaska who said, unless you think you're playing in the NHL, you might want to consider coming to the University of Alaska where you can hunt and fish and get a grade. I don't even think he finished the education piece. The truck was loaded, and I think I left. So, no, it's and Don Lucia just so happens his first coaching job was at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Wow. Yeah. Great story, Tom. Now, you've got seven kids. Six boys and a daughter.
Now, you left out the most important person in my life. Jackie
and of course.
I have seven kids.
Of course,
yes.
I should have framed that better.
Yeah.
Yeah, but seven kids and six boys, that's incredible.
Well, one thing we've learned, and Jackie and I would give advice to anyone who's out there since we're at the tail end of it now, and I know that parents who are older that have already raised multiple males, first off, I would say to them that my daughter is my favorite and all the boys know it. Mm-hmm. All right. Second, if you have more than one son, if you have two, three, four sons and you're just starting out, my advice, and Jackie will echo this, sell everything that is nice now. Everything. They will break it eventually or
liquidate
they will take
your
it
home.
Apart. Yes.
Yes. Get rid
yes,
of
and
everything.
I've got some reconstruction advice for at least one bathroom, but we can talk about that off air.
Yeah. Now, did you guys have a punch card at ER?
Actually, you say that it was every holiday somebody was going in to get stitches.
Of course. There's got to be something. So it's like, here's another Emmer kid. Get the punch card out.
Actually, you know? That's another story. So I decide I'm going to run for Congress because my predecessor and friend, Michelle Bachmann, announces she's not going to seek re-election. So I get all these calls, going to run for Congress. We're having this discussion. I have a friend of mine come over one night to talk about what we're going to do with health insurance because I was doing the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to have a job if I started running for Congress. So how are we going to do this? He leaves the house about 10 o'clock that night. We were out on the front steps. He leaves. Jackie and I are going in. It's time to go to bed. And she hears something. I, of course, hear nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still headed upstairs. She says, no, there's something wrong. Goes down in the basement. We had a sewer backup in our basement, which I've always joked. The good Lord said, you want to go to Congress? Well, here, I'm going to teach you what it looks like before you get there. We spent, we shouldn't say that. I campaigned that summer. Jackie spent the summer being the general contractor redoing the basement, which had to be completely gutted. And I tell you the story because it relates to the boys this way. We hung three mirrors, about 4 feet tall, about a foot wide each one, spaced by about an inch. And we'd had them hung there for years till the basement got flooded. Now we got to strip the walls and everything else. We took those mirrors down and remembered the reason we hung them is because the boys were wrestling and one of them threw the other one's back end through the drywall in between two studs and I didn't want to fix it. So we just got the mirrors and hung it over.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. My Uncle John Emmer once told me that it's the greatest experience you'll ever have. He had seven kids. They lived in Edina on Antrim Road and used to go over to his house. The doors wouldn't be on the hinges and the, you know.
Yeah. Was there ever a lock on your door growing up?
I don't want to say it out loud. No.
Of course not.
No.
No, I mean, we had a key to lock the door. We didn't know where it was. But, but with people coming in and out all day long and there'd be eight kids in the family and all of their friends, it was just... It was a train station.
Well, in the Arnold House, I imagine, was a bit of a train station.
It was a little bit of one.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. This is, again, another hard-hitting interview, because that's what I do. So let me take a break. When we come back, I'll ask Tom some serious questions in just a minute. It's 14 minutes until the top of the hour. Welcome back to the show. 12 minutes until the top of the hour. I have Congressman Tom Emmer in studio with me, which I'm very excited about. A couple of the Dyna boys chatting it out. And, you know, I was in a gang in Edina.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was a nonviolent gang.
Was it the Cahill gang?
No. We were nonviolent. If we ever wanted to rumble, we'd go over to Richfield and correct misspelled graffiti. That's what we did.
That's so bad.
We were a tough group.
You know, as a kid going to those Edina, when it was before it was East and West, mm-hmm. as a kid, you know, before the age of 12, going to those old Edina Richfield games.
So fun.
Oh, those kids. I mean, today we got to put helmets and elbow pads and everything just to ride a bike, right?
I know. Yes.
Back then, they're like swinging at each other in the stands. Of course, today, you know, they wouldn't just use their hands, which is the problem.
Yeah. All right. Recently, Rex Tillerson said that D.C. was a mean-spirited place. He probably never met you. What have you learned about working in our nation's capital that discourages you the most?
Self-interest.
Okay.
Yeah, it's self-interest.
But people always say, I'm here to work for the people. I'm here to work for the American people. Yeah, is that just talk?
That's funny. I think with some of them, I think some of them, it's very real.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of people. It's probably one of my greatest good surprises of Washington, D.C. You know, probably like a lot of people who listen to your show, probably like a lot of people I know, I got all my information from where I wanted to get it, where I'm comfortable getting it. And I would, on a regular basis, before I ever got to Washington, I would think, who are these people? And they obviously don't know what a couple that's raising seven kids trying to keep food in the refrigerator and pay the mortgage and put clothes on the kids. They have no concept of what they're doing to us. Mm. And I figured they were all people who thought moron was two words. So I got to I got to Washington and looked around. And it was like, you know, there's some really good people here, and they are very interested. Unfortunately, there are those, as there are in every walk of life, right? There are people that are very self-interested, and it's about their future as opposed to the next generation.
You know, I was listening to the radio the other day, and it was a fundraiser, and President Trump got up and started thanking people, and he must have thanked you about six times. And what was that event? Would you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I had the honor of chairing the it's the National Republican Congressional Committee is the campaign arm of the National Republican House, the U.S. House of Representatives. They have the Republican National Committee. The Senate has their Senate Committee. This is the outside of the official duties of the office. This is how we run campaigns. Okay. And the March dinner, the annual March dinner, is the single largest fundraiser for the GOP representatives in the U.S. House. And I was asked in my second term to chair it by our great chairman, Steve Stivers, out of Ohio. And we raised a record amount of money. So anybody who's listening out there, you hear the talking heads on the mainstream media telling you, you know, we've lost our momentum. There's all these problems. I'm going to tell you, the momentum's there. We raised $32 million.
Right.
And the president was, he was rather entertaining. He got up and he said, you know, I was here last year and you set a record. He said, 2 years before, not so good. He said, now I'm here this year again. You set another record. And then he, you know, started calling people out and he said, where's Tom Emmer? And I waved at him. I was up in the front and I said, it was all you, Mr. President, which he said, he smiled. He said, oh, isn't that nice? I'll give you half the credit.
All right. Well, when you talk about, I hear this expression, we have to reach across the aisle. Is that just another made-up expression?
No.
Does that work?
I was once told that I don't reach across the aisle well, and I said to the person who said it to me, you clearly don't know enough about me because I reach across the aisle all the time. The only difference between me and others is when I reach across the aisle, it's to grab your hand and pull you over with us, all right? Mm-hmm. And it really is about relationships. No, I think that's a real thing. Reaching across the aisle, though, means different things to different people. And I will put it in this context. I think politicians have ruined the word compromise because, well, I'll give you this example. I used to use this on the campaign trail. When Jackie and I got married, Jackie wanted four kids and I wanted three. We compromised. We have seven. All right. Now, it works wonderful in marriage. But in government, the problem is when they compromise like that, everybody gets everything they want, but we get a whole bunch of stuff we don't need and we can't afford. And so people get more and more upset. Reaching across the aisle really is about building relationships with people that want the same things we do. We want good schools. We want good, a strong military. We want good infrastructure, roads, bridges, etc. We want the same things. We just have a different way of getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Reaching across the aisle should be about building relationships with people on the other side of the aisle that have a different approach to get the same thing. and not violating our principles, but finding a way to get there together without violating our principles and our beliefs.
Now, you're in Minneapolis today. You're going to be hanging out a little bit with Vice President Mike Pence?
We are.
What's that going to be about?
So it's about trade. I take it back. I've got the trade after the Pence event. The Pence event's going to be all about the tax cuts that were just passed.
Okay.
It's interesting. They call it tax reform. They call it tax cuts. And I was having a discussion on the ride down the problem. People want their political folks to start talking to them in reality, right? You got the head of the DFL party. When Mike Pence comes into town and says he's going to be talking about the tax cuts and how they're impacting the U.S. in a good way, you got the head of the DFL party issuing a thing, oh, they're tax cuts for the rich, and that's just wrong. And when Republicans try to pick their own facts and change it, it's wrong. I mean, this tax bill that we passed at the end of December, this thing is, I think it's going to be the single greatest economic growth provider that we could have ever given to this country, dropping the corporate tax. And they all say, look, you helped corporations. Wait a second. Think to yourself. No corporation pays tax. It's a business. It passes the tax down through the bottom line, and you and I end up paying that tax. So when we dropped that tax down to 21% and made it competitive with the rest of the free world, you know what we did? We reversed the flow of companies leaving our country to find other countries with a better tax rate. And yes, they do it because they have a fiduciary obligation to their shareholders to do what's best for the company. We reversed that. So now it comes back. And you know what? Eventually what you will see it, in fact, you've already seen it, is growth starts to go bonkers. We're over 3% already. And I'll just put it in context. Remember that in 8 years under President Obama, it was barely 2%, and they told us that was the new normal. And by the way, some of us who grew up in the 70s and 80s, we remember being told, get used to the new normal. And we ran into a guy who said, you know what? If you think you can't achieve, you won't. If you think you can achieve great things, you know, shoot for the moon. You might get a few stars. And I think that's what we're doing.
Tom, I appreciate your service in Washington on behalf of the people in Minnesota. Do you get to spend much time in the summer here in our great state of Minnesota?
I'm a commuter. So the answer is yes. Awesome. I am home every weekend.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, and blessings on your day and your work and your family. Just a delight to have you in studio.
Same to the Arnold family.
Thanks for having me. All right, we'll take a short break and wrap up the show in just a minute.